The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. Offering a full range of financial services, MeQ was formed in 1936 to help people during the Great Depression. And over 70 years later, they're still here to help people during difficult times. More information is available at mecu.com.
Boarding that Greyhound bus to travel through the heart of the Deep South, I felt good. I felt happy. I felt liberated. I was like a soldier in a nonviolent army. I was ready.
Hallelujah, I'm a traveling. Hallelujah, ain't it fine? Hallelujah, I'm a traveling down freedom's main line.
When I got off the bus, a man came up to me. And I'm coughing and strangling. He said, "Boy, you all right?" And I nodded my head, and the next thing I knew, I was on the ground. He had hit me with part of a baseball bat.
Why are you planning to keep up this ride?
We're planning to keep it up because we feel that we must not surrender to violence.
Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. We're about to have a conversation with Stanley Nelson. His new documentary, Freedom Riders, will be here at the Maryland Film Festival, and we're all looking forward to it. This is something that's just an incredibly powerful documentary that was seen and had its world premiere at the Sundance Film Festival this year. Is that right? Welcome, Stanley.
Yeah, thank you so much. Great to be here.
So this did have its premiere at Sundance, right?
Yeah, it did, in late January.
So talk about, you've done a lot of fascinating films. I mean, you did Wounded Knee, didn't you?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that was, which I loved and remember well, Jonestown, and the murder of Emmett Till, and then now you've taken this on. Talk about, a little bit about you for our listeners and why you took this particular film on.
Well, I've made a bunch of films in the last 10 years or so for a show on PBS, American Experience. And actually, they approached me with the idea of the film on the Freedom Riders. We had just finished A Wounded Knee, and they said, "What do you think about this story?" And I immediately said, you know, yes, 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 it's a great story. And, you know, it hadn't really been done. There's been, you know, pieces, like in Eyes on the Prize, there was a small piece about the Freedom Riders, and in other films about the Civil Rights Movement. But there really hadn't been a real look at the Freedom Riders by itself and the Freedom Rides by themselves. And so we jumped at the chance, and we're very lucky to be able to do it.
And also because you're doing a film with people who, about a period where so many of the participants are still with us.
Yeah, that's always great. It's always great to have, you know, people who are live and lively and you know, still in great health. And real witnesses to the event, and so we were able to do that. And yeah, we have a few historians in the film, but by and large, the film is made up of people who were part of the Freedom Rides, you know, on one side or the other.
So, for our listeners again, let's go backwards. We're talking about something that occurred in 1961, and in around this time, we're talking about the spring of 61.
Yeah, right around this time. I think the Freedom Rides started on May 4th.
And, right.
You know, what it was in a nutshell, I've gotten kind of good at trying to describe what it was to people. You know, a group of 12 black and whites decided that they would go down south from Washington, D.C., starting out in Washington, and they would break the segregation laws. So they would sit together on the Greyhound buses and Trailways buses. The white people would use the colored-only restrooms. The black people would use the white-only restrooms. They would eat together in the restaurants and the bus stations, and they would really test the laws and see what happened.
But the powerful thing about this moment that you do so well in this film is the danger. I mean, this is, we're talking about segregation in the United States of America when President John F. Kennedy was elected, beginning of his presidency in 1961. The power of segregation, violent segregation, was huge. And to have black and white young people take their lives in their own hands to go through the South on these trailways and Greyhound buses to test the law of integration, the federal community, the FCC. I mean, that was pretty astounding.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that we had to deal with in making the film, what was so incredible, was that really all these people were saying is, you know, we want to be able to sit together wherever we want on the bus. So at sometimes we had, as filmmakers, we had to stop and say, wait a minute, you know, this is all that they're really asking is to sit together on the bus, to be able to eat in the restaurant, in the bus stations, to be able to use the restrooms in the bus stations. That's all they wanted. And the reaction was just incredible. And it really was the start of a movement. And I think that's what's so moving and so wonderful about the story is, you know, these 12 people who were just courageous and took it upon themselves to do this really were able to start this mass movement in the United States. So it started out with 12. It ends up with over 400 people going on freedom rides.
And you have that wonderful spokesman who worked for the Kennedy administration from the Justice Department.
John Finkenthaler.
Yes, who just really relayed how the Kennedys tried to stop this but couldn't stop it. But this is an experience. His covering it for the federal government for the Kennedy administration changed his heart and soul. It seems like.
Yeah, I mean that's one of the great things about the film too is you see people changing, you know, and so you know Bobby Kennedy and John Kennedy kind of start out. You know, they're not the Kennedys that we've come to know and love. You know, they're not in favor of the freedom rides. You know, there's a line where John Kennedy just says, you know, stop them, get them off the buses, do anything you can just to stop this. They just wanted it to stop. They didn't want the grief and the hassle. As the film makes clear, they were much more interested in foreign affairs. And as the film progresses, you know, they change. But, you know, John Siegenthaler, who was a Southerner, and was Kennedy's representative who they finally send down to kind of deal with the Freedom Riders, really becomes a different person because of the Freedom Riders.
And Diane Nash clearly is one of the heroines, is the heroine of this film in many ways.
Yeah, I mean, Diane Nash is just an incredible person, an incredible person in the movement. People don't know who she was. She was in Eyes on the Prize, but she also was 20 years old in 1961 when the Freedom Rides took place. She was a student at Fisk University. She was, you know, I have to say, she was incredibly beautiful and incredibly strong, powerful, smart, committed person, and was really one of the people who was most responsible for the Freedom Rides being taken up once the first group of 12, are beaten so badly that they can't continue. And then Diane Nash and a group of students from Nashville take up the Freedom Rides again.
And having said that, though, there were these other women in the film that were just equally as powerful, who were young students back in 1961 at Fisk University, an all-black university and from this Baptist Bible College that really braved this thing and stood up to it. I mean, that was the amazing piece, I think, is the courage. You know, we talk about people going to war, but the courage of these people to do what they did.
Right. Right, and I mean, we have to say that you know these were all non. There was all completely nonviolent action. These people knew that they were taking their lives into their own hands. And the first group, you know, look, there were white and black and a couple of people were pretty elderly, who started the Freedom Rides, and they didn't know what they would face, and they were beaten. I mean, just unmercifully till they really could not continue. But then the students from Nashville, just, you know, knowing what they're going to face. I mean, after that, they knew, you know, one of the first buses that went down there. And then, again, these were public buses. These were just a Greyhound bus, was torched and firebombed and set on fire. And then the mob tried to stop the Freedom Riders from getting off the bus after they had thrown a firebomb into the bus. The mob blocked the door to try to keep them from getting off the bus. And was screaming, you know, let's just burn them alive. And that's what they faced, just, for sitting together on the front of the bus. But as you say, Diane Nash and what we refer to as the second wave of Freedom Riders,
right,
knowing what they're going to face, these are all students in Nashville, decide that they cannot let the Freedom Riders die. And the same day, the same day that this bus is torched and the first group has to give up, the second group of Freedom Riders just decide, we're going to continue the Freedom Rides, and they come down from Nashville. That, you know, is one of my favorite moments in the film, and it's just a moment that chokes me up, you know.
Yeah, no, no.
Incredible moment of bravery, and they're young. I mean, you know, again, these are all college students. It's May. They're 2 weeks away from taking their final exams, and basically they drop out of school to continue the Freedom Rides.
And Jim Zwerg, I think, was especially a poignant figure in this documentary as a young white man who knew he could be killed, as he said.
Yeah, Jim
Zwerg
was just amazing. Jim Zwerg was an exchange student who had come from a college he had grown up in Minnesota, and he was in a college, Beloit College, in Wisconsin, which actually I went to for a little while.
Uh-huh.
And Jim Zwerg was at Beloit College, and he just decides that he wants to find out what is going on with black folks. And so he becomes an exchange student at Fisk University. And while he's an exchange student at Fisk in Nashville, he joins the movement and starts going to sit-ins and marches and things like that. And he becomes one of the Freedom Riders. And I think one of the things that was amazing to me and struck me was he told me, and then black people all backed it up, that one of the things that would happen on these Freedom Rides and on these kind of movements, that the white people who were part of the movement would be targeted first by the Southern races, because they just could not stand to see what Jim Zwerg calls, you know, himself as a traitor to the race. They couldn't stand that. So he would take the worst beatings, you know, worse than anybody. But knowing that, he still goes on the Freedom Rides, and he takes a terrible beating.
And John Lewis, our congressman, is prominent in this film, having been through all the Freedom Rides, and that I find that, I mean, he was very good at this.
Yeah, John Lewis is, look, he's just an incredible, incredible figure in American history. And, you know, John is one of the only is the only person who was kind of on both Freedom Rides, because John is one of the first Freedom Riders, the group of 12. And then he gets a call, and he has to leave the Freedom Rides because he gets a call that he has won some kind of fellowship. And if he doesn't come and do this training, he can't have this fellowship. So he leaves the Freedom Rides right before they get into the deepest South. So he's not there when the beatings happen. But then he's back in Nashville where he's in school, and he hears about it, and he joins the group that goes down with, you know, the Diane Nash group and joins the Freedom Rides again, and with Jim Zwerg, he takes again a terrible, terrible beating.
And tell me a bit about the governor of Alabama. The historic footage was interesting, but you're interviewing him as a older man now, reflecting on this was, to me, just riveting. Just because I went through it myself, but it was just riveting to hear him.
Yeah, that was just an incredible coup for us, and we were just very lucky that John Patterson, who was the governor of Alabama at that point, he was actually the youngest governor of Alabama. So he was 32 years old in 1961. So, you know, he's in his very, very early 80s when we interviewed him about a year or two ago. And he's still in great, great health, and he agreed to be interviewed. And at the time, you know, he beats, in 1958, he beats George Wallace in his run to be governor of Alabama. And that's a famous election where George Wallace says, you know, I'm never going to be out again.
Right.
And,
that's right.
And kind of cements, you know, who George Wallace became. But the one who outed him was Governor John Patterson. So John Patterson is governor in 1961. And in the film clips that we have from back then, he just, you know, spouts the most racist, vile things, you know, blames the Freedom Riders for agitating, and that's why they got beaten. You know, if they would just go home and mind their own business, then none of this stuff would happen. Those kind of statements he makes, you know, on camera back there in 61. But what was the most amazing was he agreed to be interviewed by us. And you know, I think that, look, you know, he admits that he's sorry for some of the things that happened then and some of the things that went down. But I think it's really incredible to see him on film kind of explaining himself or trying to explain himself back then.
Yeah, I was. that was an amazing. I've always curious. I would just be curious to hear just how he really feels about what he did then. If he had, did you find that he had any remorse at all?
Yeah, I think he had a lot of remorse. I mean, one of the things he said was, kind of off camera was that, I should have followed what I believed, more than wanting to get reelected. I think I've done a couple of films about the South in that time. And I think one of the things was that, there was a different kind of racism that existed, among the upper class, which anybody running for governor would have to be, which was kind of a more benign racism, if there's anything that, a less violent racism. But, you had to play to the lowest common denominator. As he said, you had to run on a segregationist ticket back then. You couldn't talk about integration and try to run for, public office in Alabama. Black people couldn't vote. And so, it was never going to work. But, so I think that he has a lot of remorse about what he said. And I think even more the way he said it, because it's very clear from the film that he fanned the fires.
Right.
That he really fanned the fires by not stopping the violence and not saying it was wrong, but by blaming the Freedom Riders who, were going to continue. I mean, they made it, once the Nashville students got in, they made it very clear they, they were going to continue no matter what. By blaming them for it, he was just escalating the violence, and he did. And I think that's one of the things that makes the film work, is because it's such a roller coaster ride, because, you think, okay, they've now set a bus on fire. What else could happen? And it gets worse, And they beat them up in Birmingham. And you're like, what else could they do? But it still gets worse.
It still gets worse.
And it just keeps on getting worse. But the Freedom Riders, keep on coming. And it's such an amazing group of people, young, old, black, white, people who commit to this action.
Well, it's an amazing film. You did really a wonderful job on this film, and I just looking forward to meeting you when you get here to Baltimore and having Baltimore come out and watch this incredible documentary on the Freedom Riders that Stanley Nelson has directed and produced. Stanley, thanks so much. It's been a pleasure to talk with you.
Oh, thank you so much. I look forward so much to being there. I think that'll be about the third time the film has shown anywhere in the country.
Oh, really?
Yeah. We're going to be we're opening night at the Atlanta Film Festival this week, and then we were at Sundance, and then we'll be in Baltimore. That's it. So,
well, we'll look forward
so much.
To it. We'll push it for all it's worth.
All right, thank you. Look forward to being there.
Take care.
All right, bye-bye.
The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait Program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Justin Levy and Christina Arison. We're engineered by Brian Boone. Our interns are Judith Lloyd, Brian Boone, Richard Good, Gay Pinder, and Marianne Amos. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again and podcast any of our past shows, hear new additional interviews, please visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for public radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.